Mainstream Mental Health Radio
with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health, one day at a time. Discussing the human condition, providing a sounding board for mental health issues, and making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber.
All right. Good morning. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. John Huber. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. We have, I think, just an amazing lineup coming today. The show's going to be very memorable for me anyhow. Remember to check our website at mainstreammentalhealth.org and let your friends and family know all about our show. You can listen to us on our podcast at iTunes, at blogtalkradio.com/mainstreammentalhealth. So let's look at our news stories for this week. We're going to look at a few of them here. The first one is, again, about millennials. They seem to be in the media a lot lately, and what we're seeing is this new census report that came out Wednesday, last Wednesday, reveals a staggering statistic on millennials and their journey to independence. An example is 1975, only about 25% of men aged 25 to 34 had incomes less than $30,000 per year. By 2016, that rose to 41% of young men, according to the report. Now, in 2015, one-third, or about 24 million young adults, ranged from 18 to 34, actually continued to live with their parents. And according to the report, while 81% of those who live at home are either working or going to school, at least one in four, that's 25% of them, aged 25 to 34, are idle. In other words, they're not going to school. They're not going to work, the report stated. Now, my expectation is that they're probably really good on their Xbox or PlayStation, but it's really a sad state where our youth are today. And again, I think we're resilient as a species. I think we're going to get out of this, but it's very disconcerting. All right, the next one is really kind of a big thing with me. I see it at the hospital all the time, and it has to do with sleep. Sleep really affects and has a big contribution to anxiety and depression. It's amazing how getting a good night's sleep can really help you handle and deal with stress in general, but especially if you're already having some depression or if you've also got anxiety on top of that. We know that sleep deficits can make focusing on work, finishing assignments, coping with everyday stress, all those things seem just totally overwhelming. And, you know, I had several patients last week that were referred to me at the hospital for anxiety. And when I sat and met with them and I did my history on them, I found out that most of them weren't getting more than an hour and a half to 2 hours sleep in any 24-hour period since they had gotten to the hospital. So I consulted with their attending physicians. We made a few adjustments. And by the time I was seeing them this week, it is amazing how much and how active those individuals were during the daytime, but also the reports from their physical therapist and speech pathologists and how they're functioning so much better than they were before, and that we're no longer having their anxiety issues. And we are able to do that without putting them on some new anti-anxiety medication, which basically a lot of those are narcotic-based, and that creates more problems with sleep, and it does become problematic. We know today that little has been known about whether or how poor sleep actually affects the specific regions of the brain that we know are involved in regulating these emotional responses. But just recently, there's a new study out at University of Illinois at Chicago College of Medicine that finds that the dorsal anterior cingulate cortex may have to work harder to overcome negative emotional responses in people with poor sleep. And this specifically targets individuals with depression and or anxiety. And as we all know, sometimes anxiety is the symptomology we actually get for depression. So it's important to stay on top of these types of things. All right, I want to remind you, you're listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. Again, my name is Dr. John Huber. And the next thing is, how do we deal with destructive criticism and naysayers without compromising your self-worth? I get a lot of students who come to me at the university, and they're always asking me about, you know, their career choice and how they wanted to do a certain thing. And then somebody in their family, you know, blows them out of the water and just dumps on them all these problems with having that career and that career choice. And I have to sit back and wonder, you know, first of all, why is somebody who's struggling to make their way in their life, why is somebody around them trying to put them down, so to speak? And what I often do is reframe what their friends or their family has told them in a different perspective. And I usually get a history on those individuals and find out, you know, what are they doing with their life? Are they being successful? You know, are they doing what they wanted to do when they were young, now that they're older adults? And it's amazing how a lot of these people who come and are super critical, they haven't been very successful in their own life. So it's interesting. Now we have this new article out in Psychology Today about nurturing and self-compassion. And it basically says that if you're someone who grapples with a harsh internal critic yourself, you know how powerful it can be. And the good news is that with a bit of introspection and hard work, we can change that voice and be more positive. And we can learn to live peacefully within ourselves. And it's just as essential as taming that inner voice, though. We have to protect ourselves from these external critics. And surrounding yourself by those who don't support you or often put you down can exacerbate your already punishing self-talk. So if you are a person who has a tendency to place negative blame on yourself or question your efficacy in life, you need to try and stay away from individuals like that. Sometimes we can't avoid that. Since there will always be naysayers and backstabbers, it's best to learn how to live with these people and or would live without them. But as beloved mentor of mine once said, becoming like Teflon and let their words bounce off you, well, it's pretty hard to do sometimes. All right. Now, talking along those same lines, what about that breakup? You know, the person you thought you were going to spend the rest of your life with, maybe not. Maybe somebody you just had a hard crush on. And you get rejected. They put you down. They break up with you. That pain of rejection can be very intense. And when you discover or a person discovers that the one you loved so deeply is no longer able to give that love back to you, it can hurt a lot. In these types of events, that unrequited partner's despair may lead them to believe that you'll never be good enough to deserve enduring love ever again, and that's a big problem. You know, if you're not willing to take a risk, you're not going to get a lot of rewards in that sense. If an individual is a living and breathing person, there will be times when we're going to be rejected. That's part of life, unfortunately. And the bridge over these troubled times is awareness that the feelings of loss and hopefulness are not permanent. And as a father, I sit back and watch my children, and as they go through their crushes, and I'm always afraid they're gonna get hurt. And as a therapist, I see people who come into my office all the time, and young people, sometimes still in high school, and they've let a destroyed or a bad relationship control their lives, and they're having difficult times. And it's real easy to sit back and make a lot of dad-like statements that aren't going to be very therapeutic. So what we do is we try to look at different ways to help them stop that spiral of self-criticism. And a lot of times we do this through reshaping their perspective, get from a different perspective. And a simple thing we do is, you know, imagine yourself 10 or 15 years down the road. How are you going to reflect back on this relationship? And that gets my patients an opportunity to step away from themselves and look back on that whole situation. Then when they start looking back on it, I turn around and ask her or ask him, tell me what you learned from that relationship. And it's amazing how they start reflecting back on the interactions they had, how they talked about or didn't talk about issues that were troubling them, and start reframing those in things. And hey, your next relationship, you won't do those types of things because you've learned these lessons from them. So we start looking at it like it's the big classroom of life, the school of hard knocks. And that pain then is kind of like your tuition to doing that. And then once we do that, it's really easy to come back to present day and start looking at, you know, what their expectations were and then which ones of them were unrealistic compared to looking back in that situation. Last thing we do is sit there and have them contemplate the fact and consider that they are separate from that relationship. And even if they were in the most perfect relationship in the world, there's part of them that is always going to be separate from that relationship. And what are some things we can do to help that separate part continue to grow and learn from that situation? And it's amazing how individuals step through this. It seems daunting at the time and devastating. And it can be disturbing, but it is something that can be done. I've seen it before, and I've helped a lot of people through that. So those are some good ideas to use. Now, I want you to remember, we're listening here to Dr. John Huber, a mainstream mental health radio show, and I remind you to invite everybody to come listen to it at Blog Talk Radio, Mainstream Mental Health. Today we have, I think, an amazing guest. Her name is Hyapatia Lee. She is one of the premier authorities on Native American methods of self-help for emotional strength. And we're all about that here at Mainstream Mental Health. And as a registered member of the Southeastern Cherokee Council, Inc., she held a position of blessed woman for the Lost River Band, where some of her responsibilities included conducting sweat lodges and healing ceremonies, leading singing and drumming circles, and teaching the Cherokee language. Hyapatia is also a member of both the X-Rated Critics Organization and the Adult Video News Hall of Fame, and was voted Actress of the Year in 1990 by the X-Rated Critics Organization. Mrs. Lee, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, and congratulations on pronouncing my name correctly.
Well, thank you.
I know it's a difficult one. A lot of people have a hard time with it.
Right, and, you know, when I was told you were going to be able to come on, I went and made sure I actually looked at some of your YouTube blogs and stuff and made sure I got it right. So,
well, thank you very much. Thank you. I appreciate that, dear.
Awesome. Well, can you discuss your career in the adult film industry and how you shifted over into more mainstream, although, you know, some people might argue that the Native American methods of self-help isn't exactly mainstream, but I think it is.
Well, thank you very much. As anyone who's alive or has lived any length of time, I've had my own emotional stresses and traumas and tribulations. And I don't think very many people who are in the adult entertainment industry are there because they've had perfect lives. So having said that, I was seeking help of my own, and I tried the traditional ways, you know, the mental health care system, the talk therapy, gestalt, the drugs and therapeuticals and all that stuff, and I did not find relief. I visited a Native American medicine man many years ago because I was experiencing trouble with infertility. I had been sexually abused as a child, and one of the results was infertility. The doctors had done just about everything they could do, and I found within 9 months after having this ceremony, I gave birth to a healthy baby boy. So needless to say, I was very impressed. I went back to study more about the traditional ways of my people with this man. He happened to be Cherokee, and he taught intertribal traditional methods. National Geographic just came out with something today that they have discovered and agreed that civilizations in the Western Hemisphere have been here for over 100,000 years. Well, we weren't just banging the earth with our fists and fighting one another. We came up with one of the most thorough self-help methods for maintaining emotional strength and integrity that I've ever heard of. And this system is known all over North America, Australia, Hawaii, Guam, New Zealand. I have found evidence of this everywhere that I have traveled all over the Western Hemisphere. I studied these methods with not only this particular medicine man, but with Gladys Pantaguidian, whose brother was Harold Pantaguidian, the last chief of the Mohicans, and a variety of other people. So that's how I knew that this was indeed an intertribal system. And I started to write books about it because the people I worked with at the Lost River Band were, you know, we had a wonderful time exploring our culture through language and our religion with sweats and pipe ceremonies and such. But I found that the most helpful thing was learning about the wheels and keys that were ways for people to provide self-help and, you know, maintain emotional strength and integrity. So I started writing books about this because I wanted to expand this so other people could benefit as well. You know, the Lost River Band is a wonderful place, but there's a heck of a lot of people in this world that are suffering. I mean, that's pretty self-evident to anybody who watches television.
Definitely.
So my fifth book is coming out in a few weeks, and I'm about three quarters done with the sixth book. And I've submitted a pilot for a television show to a couple places that I'm working on as well, trying to get this information out to the masses.
Well, you mentioned wheels and keys. Can you give me examples so we're on the same page?
Okay, certainly. For example, there's a thing called the Wheel of Life. And this is basically, it's the most basic medicine wheel. And, for example, in the South is trust, innocence, the emotions. In the West is the physical body. It's the physical world. It's our tonal reality. In the North is knowledge. I'm talking about scholarly knowledge. In the East is enlightenment, wisdom that we know inside of our hearts to be true. All right? There's a thing called The Circle of Life, which is the book that I'm going to be releasing in the next few weeks, which shows that the lifespan should last 108 years, ideally. Of course, it doesn't always. But every 9 months, we are changing our position on this medicine wheel. And there are attributes to the non-cardinal directions as well, like pattern and timing in the Northeast, your attitude and approach in the Southeast. And we go around this wheel repeatedly through life. We are on the Big South Wheel, and when we are in our childhood up to the age of 27 years. And on this Big South Wheel, there are 8 wheels in the non-cardinal directions around the outside of it and 1 in the center. When we're born into the center of the wheel, and we start in the south and work clockwise around the wheel. Then we go to the southeast. And we are presented with lessons in life about our attitude and approach, about our planning and our choreography of timing and energy. All these different things we're presented with at different times. Every 9 months, we change direction throughout our life. If we don't learn the lesson the first time around, we'll come back to it. If we've learned it, we'll be moving up and we'll be learning the next step of that particular lesson when we face that direction again. That's what I mean by wheels and keys. The circles of life is a map of life. The wheel of life is the key to the circles of life to show you what that map means, where you are on a particular time in your life, what issues are going to be facing you, what's going to be prominent in your world.
Wow. Now, professionally, I have questions for you because of your history in the adult industry. I have over the last couple of years had several clients who are in that industry, and they've had different issues with spouses and with children and things like that. And I'm curious, you know, how, you know, you have, I believe, 3 children. Is that correct now?
Yes, I do. That's right. 3 sons and 2 grandchildren. Yes.
Wow, your grandma. Awesome.
Yes, I am.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
What was it like? I have 2 children of my own. They're still middle school and high school, so
I see.
But my patients, you know, they were struggling with, you know, their kids were coming up of age in middle school, and you know, they were finding out what mommy did for a living and how she paid the bills. And, you know, she struggled with that. And then, you know, also A big one was with a client who was, you know, had a fiance who knew what she did when they were dating, and then had a major issue with it as they got closer to their actual wedding date. What are some advice you might give someone who's young in the industry with or without children? I'm kind of curious more about children, but.
Yes, certainly. Those are some excellent questions, and I certainly dealt with many of those issues. When I got into the business, I was married. My husband and I made the decision to get into the business together. So that eliminated part of the spousal issues right there. Once we had children,
right.
Of course, we did have the issues of what are the neighbors, what are the classmates, children,
right.
And parents going to think. I traveled on the road a lot for my work at the time, promoting my movies, dancing in gentlemen's clubs. That's how I got to study with all these different people across the Western Hemisphere, was by traveling to promote my movies.
Mm-hmm.
I took my children with me and I homeschooled them.
Okay,
so
you avoided
number
part of
one,
the...
Yes, exactly. Number one, I didn't have children so I could let somebody else raise them. I wanted to raise
right.
them. And if I was going to continue to make money and be able to provide for them, I was going to have to take them with me on the road in order to do that.
Right.
That meant I was going to have to educate them. By doing that, I eliminated all of the other issues as well. Of course, there did come a time when I retired from the business and I moved to a small farm in southern Indiana, a very rural environment, not a very sophisticated social situation for my children. They did run into problems, even though I was not in the business at the time. Children were told, you know, oh, I know what your mommy did, you know. They ran into that. Of course, I never lied to my children. I was very honest with them from the
right.
get-go, so there was never a time where I said, son, I need to sit down and tell you what I do for a living. No, they knew all along. You know,
mm-hmm.
But then they were faced with the fact that there are other people that do not accept it. And even though I wasn't in the business at the time, they still had to face the ramifications of what I'd done in the past. So there were issues with that. And my second son in particular struggled very, very much with that. As far as finding, I eventually divorced. I continued to be somewhat involved with the business. I wasn't really making movies, but I was dancing. I had a rock and roll band, and so I was capitalizing on the things that I had done in the past.
Okay.
Finding a new husband, the gentleman that I had become involved with at the time, he did not find out about my past the way I would have liked him to. One of the women that I had thought was my friend had taken him aside and said, "Do you know who you're dating?" You know, so I did have to deal with that as well. We eventually got married, had another son, and there were issues, you know, with the whole ramification. By the time we got married, I had retired completely from the business and focused basically on the children, the Lost River Band, that whole thing. So to people, and I got out of the business in the early 90s. So people who are in the business nowadays, it's a total new bag of tricks. I don't know much about what's going on in the business nowadays. Back in my day, I wrote my movies. I sang my own title songs. I had total control over who I worked with. As a matter of fact, there were 3 or 4 years where I only worked with my husband. So
wow.
Things were very different back then. Yeah. I remember
when we did
Rival Tales of Canterbury, which is a takeoff of Chaucer's
mm-hmm.
Canterbury Tales. That was a $300,000 budget movie. They don't
wow.
do things like that anymore.
No.
Yeah.
If you were 19 again talking to yourself, would you encourage yourself to go back and do all the things you did all over again?
I think so, because I really I learned a lot, and that's the purpose of life, is to learn the most you can. And then to share what you've learned. And if
well,
I had not gone to that answer. Oh, thank you.
I like that answer because it tells
not,
me a lot about who you are now, that you really
well,
appreciate
I,
who
yeah,
you are
if
now.
If I had not gone through what I had gone through, I would not be the person I am today. I mean, who's to say what I would have been? I learned a lot from my opportunities. I wouldn't have had the chance to travel to Australia, New Zealand, and Guam and study with these different medicine men and women had I not done what I had done. So I can't say that I made a bad choice.
Well, you've definitely had a major life transformation, and I think a better one, not that what you were doing before was wrong, but I think to me, I mean, I got into this to help people, and I see that that's exactly what you're doing. You're helping others heal
that's
and grow.
That's my motive, exactly.
And you know, looking back on it, I mean, we've talked about the situations. For you internally, why do you think this transformation occurred with you?
I was seeking help. I had gone through sexual child abuse by my stepfather, rape at the age of 9. I had gone through a lot of traumatic experiences. I was seeking help. I did not find that help in the contemporary mental health care system. All I found was talk therapy that, to me, was re-traumatizing, and drugs that were forced upon me that came with inserts that said may cause suicidal thoughts and tendencies. To me, that was counterintuitive. It made
Correct.
No sense at all. Instead, I don't want to get off on a tangent here, but I would prefer to use teaching plants. Cannabis can be used. It can calm you down within moments. If you don't like the effects, don't use it again. You'll be off of it within a few hours. These medications take 2 weeks to take effect. If you don't like the effects, it takes two weeks to get off of them. They have
or longer.
Exactly. Right. They come with debilitating side effects. There are no debilitating side effects with cannabis. I just find that the Native Americans had a much better way. And if I can help anybody with that, then my life will be worthwhile. What I'm doing right now in my life will be worthwhile if I can help somebody.
Like 2 weeks ago, we had a researcher using psilocybin mushrooms for depression, and the findings are just amazing that he's coming up with. But looking back, would you do a little introspection maybe and give me what you think personally are your like three greatest accomplishments so far in your life?
Staying alive, having committed suicide, three of my best friends, three of very good friends, including the godmother of my children, committed suicide from the adult entertainment business. So staying alive, raising healthy children. My oldest son just graduated with a PhD in physics. He's a quantum physicist specializing in quantum spectroscopy. I homeschooled him till 8th grade, so I vicariously find that to be a success of mine. Having the the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Free Speech Coalition. I definitely believe in free speech.
And that's an issue I'm actually being asked a lot lately in my interviews because of, you know, the live broadcast and people committing suicide while they're posting live broadcasts and, you know, should we do something about it? And I have to remind people, free speech is not free, it costs, and we have to be responsible with that privilege.
Yes.
So,
well, like Albert Edison said, Thomas Albert Edison said, "I may not defend with what you, I may not agree with what you say, but I will defend to my death, your right to say it."
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. Well,
and
I'm kind of bouncing all over the place.
Ideas are seeds. You know, they plant seeds in someone's mind. We have the capacity to sow those seeds in our mind or to weed them out. If we don't like the idea that they have planted in our mind, we can either simply weed them out and ignore them, or we can plant a seed to counteract that seed that these people are trying to plant in other people's minds and go out there and spread our own speech that will present facts, actual facts, that will counteract what these people are saying.
And again, I'm kind of jumping all over the place, but I've got so many different areas I want to ask you about. I mean, you know, I've watched you from a distance throughout, you know, your career in different capacities. But going back to where you're at now, and, you know, you talked about the sexual abuse as a young child and then your experiences as an adult actress and entertainer. How do you view sex now from a spiritual perspective and then maybe from a wife or mother kind of perspective at this point? Can you separate them?
Oh, yes, definitely. Sex is in the center of the wheel of life. It is not just sex. It is the creative force, and that can be used to create a beautiful painting, a symphony, a movie, whatever you're creating, it can be the sexual creative force. That's in the center of every wheel. It's a very important piece. I think a lot of times our suppression of it has caused things to be distorted. It's like we're a pendulum, and if somebody hits us, we swing in the opposite direction. That opposite direction may be one that totally shuts down sexuality and says sex is sinful unless you are married and trying to have children, period. Or it could swim in a different direction to which it says, I enjoy sex with anyone and everyone, sex should be totally free. Eventually, it will fall back into the center after swinging back and forth and back and forth. But when we try to control it and try to say that sex is natural or sex is sinful, we try to put our own beliefs on someone else's sexuality, you know, that's when we run into problems. That's when we hit people in their center circle, in their sexuality, in their creative force. And that's what causes people to do crazy things like go out and have sex with children or some horrendous, you know, rape or things like that. It's the suppression of it or saying that this is wrong or you shouldn't do this or trying to control another person. Now, having said that, there are limits. We certainly cannot take our sexuality into our hands and force it on another person. Nor can we force
Correct.
Another person to witness our sexuality. You know,
Correct.
If we want to be an exhibitionist, we want to make sure that the people that we are exhibiting ourselves to are voyeurs, not innocent children.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. And you know, that creates a lot of whole different social implications. I mean, if we even go back to the 1820s, when in the United States, we're talking a life expectancy at 25. If you weren't married when you were 12 or 13, you weren't going to have children before you died. You were an old maid at 19 and 20 years of age. And today, it's like, wait, 19, 20 years of age, some people are just starting into the dating scene at that point. And
exactly. Now we're getting to the point where people are putting off having children to the point where they're almost infertile or having infertility problems.
That's right.
And that's because we, as a society, have said, no, you're not ready for children. You got to wait until you're financially stable, until you're married, until you are set for life. Then you can think about having children. Well, by the time we do that, we're almost infertile. So there has to be a way that our mind and our society can work with our biological clock.
Well, I think
the answer is to that. I don't know what the answer is to that, but I know that there has to be a way that we can work with nature and have harmony.
Well, I think it goes back to what you were talking about being in tune with yourself and knowing what your true wants and needs are. And, you know, that includes having children and having sex, all that. And
exactly.
We suppress so much of that in our society. And tell everybody this is the way it should be. And now with social media, you know, it used to be, you know, we had to worry about the Twiggy models coming across our TV screens and maybe in a magazine, but now it's on our Facebook every single minute of the day. And our millennials, our young children are so just inundated. It's scary.
We have many different image makers. Our image makers are everything from teachers to parents to what we see on television. And when young girls especially get the image makers telling them that you are good for sex, that's what's important about you, that you look good, that you look sexy, that you be skinny, that you be appealing to the opposite sex, that is what you are for, that is your value, that is highly important to you. Well, that's what they take in. You know, we are sculpted by our image makers. They chop off the parts that they think will not make us fit into society, that will make us ugly to society, not acceptable in society, that will get us into trouble, that will get us jailed, that will get us put into mental institutions. They take those pieces and they say, you can't be like that. You've got to take that off. You can't act like that. That's not acceptable behavior, you know. And then what we are left with is all that we have in our toolbox to deal with life. And some of the things that have been carved away from us might have been very necessary for dealing with life. The Native American system, what I call Native Strength, I've called this system Native Strength. We believe that, just like Freud, there's the ego and the superego, but we go a step further. We have inner children, both a boy and a girl. It doesn't matter if you're a man or woman. We have inner adults, a man and a woman, and we have inner elders, adult male and adult female. And these inner elders are the ones that are capable of connecting with great spirit and seeing, like you were mentioning before I came on, getting out of the maze of life, saying, what are you going to think about 10 years down the future about this relationship you just had? What did you learn from it? That's what our inner elders do for us. One of the things I don't like about these therapeutical medications is they shut off our ability to communicate with our inner elders and our inner children. Our inner children's job is to find beauty in the world, to go out and explore, to go out and have adventures, to be adventurous, and to not be afraid to take risks and chances. And if we shut that down, then all we are robots that are going to a job every day and paying our taxes. Yeah, we're contributing to society, but our soul is not evolving. We're put here on earth for our soul to evolve. And before we are born, this is part of the Native American philosophy, the Native Strength System. Before we are born, we make a plan of what we want to do in this life. What are the lessons that we need to learn in this life in order to advance to where we need to be, hopefully get closer to being one with Creator. And in order to make those lessons occur in our life, we choose where we will be born, who will we be born to, who will be involved in our life. These are not people that are going to agree with us. These are people that are going to give us the opportunities to explore our inner selves and decide who we truly are and to advance on our path. Now, if all we do once we are here is cut off our connection to our inner elders and our inner selves and numb ourselves so that we can just do everything society tells us to do, when we come to our deathbed, we have not advanced as a soul. We have not fulfilled the promise that we made to ourselves before we were born.
And we're dooming ourselves to repeating it all over again, I think.
Precisely.
I think
there have been studies done by the University of Virginia. I cannot remember the gentleman's name, but he studied over 2,500 children who were born with memories of past lives, most of which were born into families who did not believe in past lives. These children had memories of events that could be verified in history. It led this gentleman to conclude that this was a reality.
You've got so much to talk about, and I really want to keep going. I'm running up against some time limitations here. Can we get an information, where we can go find more about you? Where can we look you up?
Absolutely. All my books are available on Amazon, Amazon.com. Native Strength is the name of the series. I'm available on Twitter, Hyapatia Lee on Twitter. I have a blog on WordPress, Hyapatia Lee at WordPress.com. Those are the best places to keep in touch with me.
Okay. And the name of your new book coming out?
The Circles of Life.
The Circles
and
of
the
Life.
After
well,
that
I look forward to.
Bullies.
Oh, wow. That'll be interesting. Well, I appreciate you coming on today, Hyapatia. You're just
pleasure.
A wellspring of information, and maybe we can continue this on at another time. I'd love to, anyhow.
Love to. Thank you.
Thank you. So, everyone, that concludes our show today of Mainstream Mental Health Radio. Special thanks to our guest, Hyapatia Lee. To learn more about our show, visit us at mainstreammentalhealth.org. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you here next week.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google+, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram at Mainstream Mental Health, Twitter at Mainstream MENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.